all correctly. Kevin had amassed pictures of Delilah talking to various people at the party. Those were the first people he interviewed. Mostly she was hanging with Snow and his buddies, who all alibied one another. I'm still not down with that. Buddies lie for one another, but they're not my main focus since Delilah was buried at Bogat with the others who were murdered long before any of Snow and his buds were enrolled in school. I'm interested in who was at that party and whether or not they were captured talking to Delilah. You want to see if Carter was there? Anyone. Student, faculty, employee, townie. And, yes, Carter as well. I'm trying not to have tunnel vision, but after last night it's getting harder. Let's just see who we can place at the party. I'll start making calls. So once again I ask you, who's watching Rena? I hired out. You hired a bodyguard? That doesn't sound like you. Come on, fess up. Is it your ancient buddy from your L.A. days? No, it's not Scott Oliver, who is now running a very successful security firm in Miami. It's just someone who is handy. Thanks, Harvard. No thanks necessary. I'm dying to nail the bastard. Any way I can help. Decker hung up the phone. The first order of business was to find out as much as he could about Hank Carter and Michael Palak before he interviewed Lydia Urbana, Palak's wife and Carter's sister-in-law. An hour later, still engrossed in his computer, Decker jumped at the jangling ringtone of his cell. He looked at the screen, an out-of-town area code, 805. This is Decker.
Hello, stranger.
Decker sat up.
Margie, how the hell are you?
Doing well.
And Will?
Retired and happy. He's into bird watching. He's kind of gotten me into it as well.
I can see that. You both like to travel, and you both like the outdoors.
And we're both a little nuts.
Aren't we all a little something? It's so good to hear your voice. It must be my week for old friends.
Watch that adjective, detective.
However old you are, I'm older. Keep that in mind.
What do you mean, you're weak for old friends?
Oh, boy. I tell you this with great reluctance.
Decker took his time relating what happened last night and his solution. When he was done, there was silence over the phone.
Are you still there?
I am,
Marge said.
Exactly what made you think it was a good idea to involve Christopher Donati in anything?
It is a reasonable question. Both Rena and I think that Carter is trying to make it personal to get me thrown off the case.
I'll buy that.
Donati's my Hessian. He can fight the war so I can concentrate on the job.
The British lost the war, Pete.
He's only here for a day or two until I can catch my breath and figure out my next strategy with Carter. Once I calm down, I'll send him back.
But we both know he'll take good care of Rena.
Enough about my problems. What's going on, Sergeant?
That woman's picture you sent me, Erin Young? You thought she might be in L.A.?
Decker sat up.
You found her?
Not sure.
If I did, it's like a needle in a haystack. I'm going to scan the picture. I hate to be old-fashioned, but these pictures were taken without her knowledge, so they're not very good and the images don't scan well. Let me know what you think.
Who is the woman in the pictures?
I know her as Elena Hardgreaves. She doesn't have a Facebook page or any kind of social media, which is suspicious in and of itself.
Where'd you find her?
First, just look at the pictures, okay?
Sure.
15 minutes later, he was back on the phone with Marge.
It may be her, but it's hard to say.
My captain is trying to get a warrant to see if anyone has been paying taxes under Erin Young's social security number, but that is slow going. Tell me what you know about Elena.
She works as a waitress at a local fish restaurant in Old Town Ventura. She moved here about 3 years ago, which kind of fits with your time frame. It could be she originally moved to L.A., but then she got tired of the city that eats its own babies. I don't know what she did before she came to my city, but before she was a waitress, she worked as a live-in caregiver for a very nice old lady who died 6 months ago. Suspicious death? Not at all. The woman was 86 and died of colon cancer. The woman had kids, but I think she left Elena some money. Obviously not enough to retire on, but it was enough for her to rent an apartment of her own. Have you talked to her yet? No, I haven't. I thought you'd like to come out here and do it yourself, under my official guidance, of course. Of course. Decker thought quickly. If he hustled, he could arrange a trip to the West Coast before Shabbat tomorrow. Although they'd have to leave very early Friday morning, time was on their side. The spontaneous vacation would serve a multifold purpose. He could interview Elena, get Rena out of town and away from Carter, and they could spend a romantic weekend together in Ventura. As for Donati, he'd be glad to crawl back under his rock. I can probably arrange to be there tomorrow night before the Sabbath, so I wouldn't be able to talk to her until Sunday. What are Elena's hours? I don't know, but I'll find out. You're bringing Rena, of course? Absolutely. Where's the best place to stay for the weekend? There are a couple of really nice places with ocean views. I'll book something for you. You're still my gal, Margie. Always will be my gal. I miss you, Pete. In my head, you talk to me all the time. Whenever I'm at a crossroads, I ask, what would Decker do? I hope it helps. It does. I'm glad. It's been a tough week, but it just got a lot better. I'll go phone Rena now. Thanks so much. Don't be a stranger. I could say the same for you, Decker told her. You know we have guest bedrooms and we live in the woodlands. Lots of birds. Thank you, Peter. If the free accommodations don't do it, the recent sighting of the flying rainbow-spotted bunting just might do the trick. Even though the car was a Prius, Donati heard it pull up to the curb. His ears, sensitive to the slightest sound from birth, had become particularly acute because over the years he had made enemies. It was especially useful now because his sight wasn't what it used to be. He stood up from the dining room table and walked over to the picture window, hiding himself in a corner, looking through the sheer drapes. He walked over to the kitchen. Come here for a sec. Rena knew the drill from Peter. Cooperation first, the questions later. Chris was as tall as Peter, but in his boots he was easily 6'6". He guided her to the corner of the window. A man had gotten out of the car carrying a bouquet of flowers. Is that your Romeo? Yes, that's Hank Carter. God, what does he want? Go in the back. I want to hear what he has to say. Then go in the hallway. Just don't be around when I open the door. Donati untucked his shirt and stuck the Glock in his jeans. Carter knocked, and Donati answered the door, waiting until Carter spoke first. The guy was around 5'10", with an average build, and looked to be around his age, maybe a couple years older. Carter said, I'm looking for Rena Decker. Donati said nothing. Is she in? Indisposed. What do you want? That's between Mrs. Decker and myself. Well, now it's between Mrs. Decker, you, and me. What do you want? Slowly a smile came to Carter's lips. Indisposed? Donati said. I'm her brother. What do you want? Carter shifted uncomfortably. You don't look like her brother. Half-brother. Look at the eyes. Donati folded his hands in front of his chest. What do you want with my sister? Why are you bringing her flowers? She's married and her husband isn't home. What are you doing here? Nothing. Carter looked down. It's a peace offering, that's all. I wanted to apologize. For what? That's really none of your business. Donati was silent. Carter sighed. She may have misconstrued my behavior yesterday as inappropriate. You're not helping your case coming here when her husband isn't home. Rena stepped into Carter's line of vision. What do you want? May I come in, Mrs. Decker? Rena rolled her eyes. Let him in. It's all right. Donati didn't move. Carter had to step around him. He went into the living room, and Rena relieved him of the flowers. I'll put these in water. She disappeared into the kitchen. Carter's eyes went to the two guns on the table. Someone's a fan of the Second Amendment. I love guns, but can't own any. Felony conviction. These are Rena's. Donati made a show of retrieving the Glock from his waistband. Sit down. What were you in for? Carter sat down. Murder. But it was a misunderstanding. Rena came out with a vase of flowers and put them on the table. Carter said, You have a brother who was in the slammer for murder? Half-brother, Donati corrected. Without missing a beat, Rena laid a hand on Chris's shoulder. There's always one in every family. What parent do you two have in common? Both Donati and Rena said father in unison. Donati gave her a look that said, Let me talk. Rena gave him a look that said, I can talk for myself. She said, My parents' marriage was on the rocks, and my dad was feeling his oats, I guess. She smiled. Carter said, You find that humorous? Actually, what Rena found humorous was the thought of her parents, both Holocaust survivors, ever straying. They had always been more in love with each other than anyone else, including their kids. I didn't find the situation humorous, no, just the result. He's a funny guy? Carter asked. A barrel of laughs, Donati answered. Carter looked at the guns. His hand stretched out toward the Magnum and was instantly slammed down on the table by Donati's palm. Carter yanked his hand away and waved it in the breeze. Yow, Jesus, are you crazy? I just wanted to look. Donati spoke mildly. Looking isn't a problem. Touching is. I think you've overstayed your visit. You're psycho. He glared at Rena. He's not your brother. He's probably some goon that your husband hired to watch over you. Rena stared at him. Why in the world would Peter hire someone to watch over me? Silence. With the murders and all. My husband was a homicide cop for 30 years. It never spilled over into our personal lives. I've never even thought about it. Carter waved his hand in the air again. You haven't heard the end of this. He got up and started toward the door. Donati said, Hey, Carter. You may know where she lives, but I know where you live. Carter said, Are you trying to intimidate me? That wasn't intimidation. Donati got up, ambled over to Carter, and closed in until their chests were touching. Chris absolutely towered over him. This is intimidation. Instinctively, Carter backed away and looked at Rena. Your husband will hear about this. He turned around and slammed the door behind him. As soon as the car took off, Rena said, Was it necessary to slap him that hard? No. I just enjoyed hurting him. A pause. I need coffee. Fine. Rena went back into the kitchen and retrieved the pot. When she poured Donati a cup, he didn't even bother to look up. You want me to leave you the pot? Please. Donati sipped the coffee. Quick question, Chris. Why did you tell him that you were my brother? Were you offended by it? No, you're like a relative. But why tell him such an obvious lie? Who are you talking to, Rena? I told him a lie because I like to lie. Any other stupid questions, or can I get back to work? Rena paused before she spoke. Then she said, I know you came out on a moment's notice just to protect me, and I really do appreciate it. But even so, you don't have to be rude, not to anyone, especially not to me. Donati looked up.
Understood.
I just baked some brownies. Do you want one?
I'm actually a little hungry.
I'll fix you something.
Good.
He paused.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Problem solved. All men were psycho on empty stomachs. Despite all the bluster, Carter was nervous.
I know what you did, and I know why you did it. But I'll tell you right now, it didn't work, Decker.
What didn't work, Dr. Carter? I'm very confused. First off, why were you at my house?
That's my business.
No, it's my business. Why?
Just to apologize if I scared Rena last night.
You didn't, but it was weird.
This is all beside the point. I'm going to report this to your captain. That goon you hired roughed me up.
Why would I hire anyone to rough you up, Professor? And what goon are you talking about?
The ape at your house who's pretending to be your brother-in-law. You hired him to intimidate me. I'm taking this up with the civilian board. You and your captain are going to hear about this.
Why would I want to intimidate you?
I'm not falling into that trap. You'll hear from my lawyer, and so will that goon.
Dr. Carter, I'm sorry if I intimidated you, and I certainly didn't hire anyone to give you a hard time. But you're right about one thing. Chris isn't my brother-in-law. He's the biological father of our foster son, Gabriel. Chris comes into town now and again, wreaks havoc, and then leaves. I didn't even know he was coming in until this morning when he showed up at my door. What did he do to you, by the way?
He assaulted me. He slammed my hand on the table. I'm filing charges. You'd better have him arrested or I'll make sure you'll regret that you didn't.
You want me to arrest Chris for slamming your hand on the table?
Carter looked momentarily sheepish.
He practically broke my pinky. It's still swollen. I demand an apology from both of you.
I didn't do anything to apologize for, and I know that Chris would rather spend time in jail than apologize for anything.
Decker sighed. But I'll arrest him if you insist.
I insist.
I'll do what you want, sir. But honestly, Donati is not the type of guy you want on your bad side.
Hold on, I want to show you something.
Decker brought Donati up on his computer screen. Why don't you read this first and then make a decision? As Carter read about Donati, his eyes got wide.
He owns a whorehouse?
Several. One in Elko, a couple in Mexico in El Chapo's territory. Chris is a tough guy. He knows some evil people.
He's mob?
His adopted dad was the head of a family, yes. But Chris is his own Cosa Nostra. He works solo, and that makes him even more dangerous.
And you associate with this psychopath?
Chris and I have a relationship that goes back over 2 decades. I originally arrested him for murder. Then I exonerated him because the one murder I arrested him for, he actually didn't do. I guess he harbors a soft spot for me. He is crazy, I'll grant you that. Both he and his wife are nuts. They abandoned their 14-year-old son, knowing full well that my wife and I would take him in. And we did. Gabe is terrific. He's a classical pianist, went to Juilliard, and is now touring the best concert halls in Europe. He's part of our family, and I suppose that makes Chris a tiny part of our family as well. I will do whatever you want, Dr. Carter, even if it means hauling in Chris Donati for slapping your hand. I promise you, he won't hold it against me. Carter didn't answer.
Tell me what you want, and I'll give you the paperwork to fill out, Decker said.
But I will say this.
Once the charges have been filed, Chris's behavior is out of my hands.
You're trying to get me to drop the charges.
So far, there are no charges to be dropped. I'm here to protect and serve and act as a public servant. Tell me what you want to do.
Carter jabbed a finger into Decker's chest.
You know what? I'm looking into you, and if I find even the tiniest item that compromises you as a cop, I swear I'll get you removed from Greenbury, even if I have to take it all the way to the governor of this state, whom I have met more than once.
Suffice it to say, we're both on each other's radar. Would you like to press assault charges against Christopher Donati for slapping your hand in my home?
The professor turned and walked away without another word. Decker leaned back in his chair and tried not to appear too smug. Carter had been wounded, but not mortally. He'd be back as soon as he recouped his strategy.
Both on each other's radar. For now, the score was 1-0, cop leading at the bottom of the first.
Chapter 31. Heading out to Kennedy Airport at 1 in the morning to catch a nonstop to L.A. at 5 a.m., neither Decker nor Rena went to sleep that night, opting to nap on the plane rather than awaken with that queasy feeling in the pit of the stomach. The flight arrived on time, and they taxied into LAX at 8. After renting a car, they were in Los Angeles at 9 a.m., right as the stores and markets on Pico Boulevard opened their shutters. The first order of business was a quick stop to get food for the weekend. Afterward, they stopped at Coffee Bean for to-go coffee and hit the road for the freeway drive to the city of Ventura.
"When's the interview?" Rena asked, sipping on a cappuccino.
"It was supposed to be Sunday," Decker replied, "but Marge thought sooner was better. If the waitress is Erin Young, she doesn't want her to bolt."
"What's your intuition?"
"Don't know on this one, Rena. I couldn't tell by the photos. It's been 4 years, and the pics were taken on the sly, so they weren't that clear."
Decker entered the freeway ramp.
"By the way, I'm not sure it was a good idea to let Donati stay in our house without supervision."
"What's he going to do?"
"Steal my guns, for one thing."
"Why would he do that? He's armed to the hilt."
"Just to say he did it."
"I'm more concerned about Hank Carter doing something evil rather than Chris Donati stealing your guns. I think Gabe's coming down for the weekend."
"Poor kid.
Gabe is no longer that abandoned 14-year-old we took in. He can take care of himself."
"Does he know the circumstances?"
"Chris told him when he asked him to come down. Maybe he actually misses his son."
"More likely Chris wants an extra set of hands. Gabe's a great shot."
"So cynical."
Rena finished her coffee. As they took the curves through the canyon, she gazed out the passenger window, studying a day that promised heat and smog. When they crossed over into the valley, the temperature was already above 80.
"I forgot how hot September in Los Angeles is."
"Best time of the year in Greenbury and worst time of the year here. But the good news is, we're not going to be in L.A. We'll be seaside in Ventura with blue skies and 6-foot waves in case you're interested in surfing."
Rena brightened. "You booked a hotel on the beach?"
"Marge handled everything. You can either thank her or blame her."
"So you had nothing to do with any of this?"
"I asked her for a romantic getaway near the ocean."
"Oh,"
she patted his leg.
"You still care."
"Least I could do after you put yourself out there for me."
"Don't blame yourself for that, Peter. Who knew that Carter would be a creep?"
"He's a suspect, Rena. I shouldn't have agreed when you asked to attend his lecture."
"If he was determined to spook me, he would have found me, lecture or no lecture. At least I had backup."
She nudged his rib gently. Notice my spiffy cop lingo. Decker smiled. You've really been a help since we moved. A pause. I mean, your input was always welcome, but since we've been in Greenbury, you've picked up some of my slack when I'm short-staffed. You know, you're working a non-paid part-time job. Not to mention the never-ending coffee pot. That, too. Actually, I like nosing into your business. Maybe you should deputize me or something. When he didn't respond, Rena said, I'm kidding. I'm wondering if that would be possible. Are you interested? She gave the question some thought. I'm not, but I thank you for the compliment. Helping you is one thing. Doing it as a paid job, well, I'd rather cook for 200 people. You'd be a terrific detective, darling. You've got a keen intuition and you're a crack shot. Thank you very much, but I'll still pass. She patted his leg again. So far, we've been a successful life team. Let's keep it that way. Red and yellow roses, the attached card saying, To my favorite partner. Rena regarded her husband. That could mean you talking about me or Marge talking about you. Decker put the pastrami, smoked turkey, potato salad, and the coleslaw in the minibar to keep them fresh. He left the barbecued chicken on the counter. They're for you, but I had Marge find the local florist. I told Marge to say, Love, Peter. She might have improvised. Rena laughed and looked out the window. What a view! This is perfect! The admiration for infinity was interrupted by the jangle of a phone. Decker depressed the button. Hey there, Margie. Thanks so much. Wonderful accommodations. Everything's perfect. You did great. Glad you like it. I like the message on the flower card as well. Had to get my sentiments in. Hope Rena didn't mind. She was fine with it. Good. A pause. Thanks, Decker said. Everything okay? Why do you ask? Marge said. Instinct after working with you for 25 years. What's going on? Here's the thing. Uh-oh. Not uh-oh quite yet. A beat. She's vigilant, Pete. She noticed me yesterday, and she noticed me again today. Took a long, hard look and didn't like what she saw. She's still working at the restaurant. I'm watching the front and I've got someone at the back, but I'm using police time for a case that isn't ours. Hold on, he turned to Rena. When is Shabbos? About 4 hours. To Marge. How far away am I? About a 2-minute drive, 15-minute walk. I'll be right there. I'm sure you're tired, but I think that would be best. Of course. See you soon. He turned to Rena. I'll be back as soon as I can. How far are you going? Not far. Marge says it's a 2-minute drive or a 15-minute walk. Give me directions and I'll meet you there. It's a beautiful day and I want to stretch my legs. I don't know how I feel about your walking alone. Unless Hank Carter took off right after us, I'll be fine. When Decker didn't answer, Rena said, Stop worrying. I'll check in with you when I get into town. She smiled and poked his ribs. And if you don't see me in 20, call the police. Old Town Ventura Main Street was a palm-lined boulevard of cafes, boutiques, and second-hand stores housed in tile and brick buildings going back a century. Among its historical structures were an Art Deco theater, an original Beaux-Arts City Hall, and the 4-story Earl Stanley Gardner Bank Building, where it was said that the writer was inspired to write his Perry Mason series in the second-floor law offices. With few of the typical clothing brands in sight, the retail sector hearkened to a different time, when life was slower and people strolled instead of jogged.
Decker found parking in one of the free lots and walked a block, passing a candle store, an olive oil store, several small eateries, a one-off coffee cafe and bakery, and a used clothing shop with a sign that said, "Trade-ins were welcome." The Rod and Reel restaurant was off the main road. The chalkboard outside advertised fresh fish, and being as the place was a few blocks from the ocean, Decker didn't doubt the claim. Marge was standing outside the door, checking phone messages. She looked up as she heard Decker approach and gave him a 1,000-watt smile. A hug ensued, and both were grinning. He held her at arm's length and looked her over. Marge was a tall woman with wrinkles at the corners of her laughing brown eyes. Her skin was tan, and she had grown out her hair, now able to tie it in a ponytail. She was in a long-sleeved white shirt tucked into khaki slacks with rubber-soled Oxfords on her feet. Decker nodded. "You're more blonde and more buff." "Living the dream, Rabbi," she told him. "Life in the slow lane is good. You look pretty handsome yourself." "Thanks, Margie. I could use a bit of an ego boost. I've got 3 dead bodies, and your Elena Hardgreaves is the closest I've gotten to anything resembling a breakthrough. Let's go in and find out if I'm a hero or zero." Decker opened the door. "After you." The place was packed with humanity. Those waiting for tables, those waiting for stools at the raw fish bar, and those occupying said tables and stools. The restaurant was big and bright and nautical in theme, blue, aqua, and white glass spheres behind glass partitions mimicking bubbles. Mock game fish trophies, ship ropes, and life preservers hung on the walls. There were many servers scooting their way through the maze of flesh while carrying trays of food and drink. Marge pointed to a woman who was waiting on an elderly couple with young children. She was in her mid-30s, around 5'6", with a slim figure. She had short hair, a round face, and light eyes. Decker said, "Watch this." He walked over to the woman's back and waited until she had finished serving. Then he shouted, "Hey, Aaron!" The woman turned around, then gasped and dropped her empty tray. Everyone turned to look at her. Decker picked up the tray, took her elbow, and led her away from the busy floor. "Where's the manager, Ms. Hardgreaves?" The woman remained speechless. Her face was ashen. He said, "I'm from the Greenbury police. You're not in trouble, but I need your help." Marge came over and showed Aaron her identification. "We just want to talk to you, Ms. Hardgreaves." The woman's eyes were terrified. She still couldn't speak. Decker said, "Let me talk to her manager." "No, you stay with her and I'll talk to the manager. I'm the official, remember?" "I stand corrected." After Marge walked away, Aaron finally found her voice, which wasn't more than a whisper.
"What do you want?"
"Let's wait until Sergeant Dunn comes back before we talk."
"Do I have to talk to you?"
"No, you don't. But in your hometown, there may be a serial killer on the loose. We've already dug up 3 bodies near Bogat Trail. I've got ideas, but that won't get me anywhere. I really need help."
"How'd you find me?"
"I talked to your mother. She said your dream was to go to Hollywood. I used to work in the LAPD. I still have contacts. Sergeant Dunn and I worked together for many years."
When she didn't answer, Decker said,
"I wouldn't be surprised if your mother knew where you were all along. I thought that much when I spoke to her. She pointed me in that direction, but she didn't give you away."
Aaron said nothing.
Both of them watched Marge walk toward them.
"I got you a half-hour break, but not a second more. Let's go to the mission. It's quiet there."
The trio walked outside into the bright sunlight. In the distance was the Bozar City Hall building, elevated and looking over Old Town like a guardian angel. Decker's phone rang. Over the line, Rena said,
"Just checking in. Where are you?"
Marge and I are going to the mission, wherever that is. It's at the end of Main Street. You can't miss it, Marge said.
I heard that, Rena said. I take it the visit is business?
Correct.
Then that must mean good news. I'll do a little shopping. Call me when you're done.
Don't break the bank.
Peter, don't you know the rule?
Rena laughed.
When you're on vacation, whatever you charge doesn't cost money, and whatever you eat has no calories.
Chapter 32 San Buenaventura Mission was erected in the late 18th century by Franciscans, the last of its kind to be founded by Father Junipero Serra, who was sainted in the 21st century. Most of the old structure had been destroyed by fire and earthquake, but the newly remodeled building still contained the original church with its painted crossbeams and hardwood floors. The place had been refashioned in the Monterey style with a peaked roof, white exterior walls, and dark trim. After paying an admission fee in the gift shop, Decker, Marge, and Aaron walked through the shop and up a few steps into a tiny museum with historical artifacts, and then out into the grounds built around a tiled fountain with walkways in a T-shape. The magnificent gardens were irrigated by a duct system created by the indigenous Chumash Indians. The beds were filled with native flowers still abloom in the warm California sun. The flora was especially lovely because the day was warm and cloudless, with a gentle breeze wafting from the ocean blocks away. Choosing a bench at random, the place was empty, Marge sat and placed Aaron between Decker and herself. Dressed in a white shirt and black pants, the restaurant uniform, Aaron hung her head and had seemed to curl inward. Decker regarded Marge and then took the lead.
Aaron, I was really worried about you. I'm really glad you're alive and well.
When she didn't respond, he said, You know, you're not in any trouble. Silence.
He needs your help, Marge said.
For what? Her voice was soft. Decker said, Recently we found some bodies near Bogat Trail. I realize that the pathway wasn't around when you lived in Greenbury, but it's near your mother's cabin, and you know the area. I was terribly worried that you were among the bodies, so it's wonderful to find you not only alive, but in a new life. And I have no desire to uproot you or upend that life. But as Sergeant Dunn said, I need your help. When she didn't talk, Decker continued. I think you were brutally attacked. I think that's why you left so abruptly, without packing, without a word to anyone. You felt lucky to be alive, and all you wanted to do was escape. Tears were streaming down her face. Tell me about it. She shook her head no. Please, Aaron. There are three sets of parents who are looking for justice. Just tell me what happened.
I'm not going back.
Understood.
Ever.
Understood. She wiped her eyes with the backs of her hands.
I'm going to get fired if I don't get back.
Marge offered her a tissue. No, you won't, I promise. She sighed and took the Kleenex. She started shaking, even though it wasn't cold.
It was Rick.
Decker narrowed his eyes and thought a moment. Ricardo Diaz? She nodded.
You talked to him?
I interviewed him about you. He took out his notepad. He said he fired you because your hands were in the till. Was that a lie? A long pause.
No. I did take money.
She rubbed her arms.
He said he wouldn't report me, and I was very grateful about it. But afterward, he expected things.
Her knee started bouncing up and down.
It wasn't any big deal at first. It wasn't like I was a Catholic schoolgirl or anything. But he got
real controlling very quickly. Very demanding. Who I was with. Where I'd go. Things that weren't any of his business.
She bit her lip.
When I tried to call it off, he threatened to tell my boss at the Circle M. So I told him I'd just tell my boss myself. And that made Rick furious.
He had to be in control, Marge said. She nodded. Decker said, What happened the night you disappeared? The tears flooded back.
It was warm, and I decided to walk home. I'd done it hundreds of times. There was a car. His car. He pulled up beside me.
Her voice was trembling and her breathing became shallow.
I told him to go away. He said he just wanted to talk.
She was almost panting. She bit her lip again.
I knew better than to get inside the car. I started running into the woods. He got out and ran after me.
She tried to sniff back tears.
I tripped. Next thing I knew, he was on top of me.
She started sobbing.
He tore off my necklace. It sliced my neck. He started choking me.
Marge put a hand on her shoulder.
You must have been absolutely terrified.
She nodded and wept.
I fought as hard as I could, because I knew he was going to kill me, but I couldn't get him off. I blacked out.
Both Decker and Marge waited for her to go on. She wiped her eyes and blew her nose. Marge gave her another tissue.
Thanks.
A long pause.
When I came to, it was still night. I remember feeling very, very cold, although I remember having my clothes on. I was in the woods, lying on the ground. I was very confused.
Her eyes were far away.
My throat was sore. My head was throbbing. I felt raw all over, like I'd been sanded. I couldn't move anything except my head. I saw a figure digging a hole. A deep hole.
She looked at Decker.
I don't know exactly where it was, but I knew I was in the woods.
You're doing great, Erin, Decker told her. Just terrific.
In my mind, it's very sketchy.
Actually, for something so horrific, you have an amazing amount of detail. She clasped her hands and hit her chin with her knuckles.
I forgot what I was saying.
You saw a figure in the woods. She nodded.
Digging a hole. I knew what it meant. I knew he thought I was dead, or he didn't care. I knew I had to get out, but I was very weak and confused.
She didn't talk for a long time. Decker said, How'd you escape?
The good part was I wasn't tied up. Like I said, he must have thought I was dead. There was another shovel close to me. Maybe another person was supposed to come to help him dig the hole, I don't know, but I do remember reaching out my hand. I couldn't get it. I inched toward the handle, as quiet as I could be. I finally was able to grip it. I waited for a while, just holding the shovel while lying on the ground. I kept trying to clear my head.
Of course, Marge said.
At one point, he stopped digging, started walking toward me. Maybe walking to the other shovel, I don't know, so I knew I had to do something. I sprang up on my knees, that was as far as I could move, and bashed him in the back of his legs. His knees buckled. He fell. I stood up and tried to bash his head, but he rolled over and tried to pull the shovel away. Instead, I whacked him on his arm and on his back. I must have hit him with the sharp end of the blade because he started bleeding really bad. Just blood spurting all over. And then I just ran. I ran and ran and ran and ran. I don't even know how I got home. I certainly don't remember packing or anything, and I don't remember riding my bike anywhere. But I must have ridden it to a bus stop, because I do remember being on a bus to L.A. with a small bag of clothes and about $500 in cash. I felt dirty and awful and sick and scared. I didn't have my purse or a phone. Rick must have taken it. Them.
She checked her watch.
I need to get back.
Erin, I know how hard this is for you, Decker said. It has to be traumatic and painful. I remember when I was shot. So many things go through your mind. She turned to him.
You were shot?
It's a danger of my job. But what happened to you should never, ever happen to you again or to anyone else. The scope of the horror is unimaginable. She nodded. But you know, I can't arrest him without your help.
I'm sorry, but I can't do it.
Her voice faltered.
I just can't.
Erin, I respect your decision, and I respect that you may have your own timetable for recovery, but we can't let him do this to any other woman.
My mother still lives there.
We can protect her.
Sorry, but I don't think you can.
I can't get him without you, Erin.
I'm not going to testify against him.
When Decker was silent, she said,
So where does that leave me? Are you going to arrest me?
No. Decker shook his head. No, I would never do that. You've suffered enough. But without you, it'll make it that much harder to get Diaz. I'll just have to put a watch on him and hope he trips up. She nodded. We could videotape something if you're willing.
No, not yet. I'll think about it. That's as much as I can do right now. I'm sorry.
Decker said, I understand. Erin stood up.
So can I get back now?
Marge and Decker stood as well. She said, Sure, you can go back. Decker said, Thank you so much for talking to us.
We'll give you our cards, cell numbers included, Marge said.
If you suddenly remember something, please call us anytime. Erin nodded. I'm local, Marge said. If you just want to talk, I'm available whenever you want.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Decker said. Would you mind if I take down your phone number? I couldn't find one for you. I might need to call you if I have any more questions.
I only use burner phones, and I never call anyone. If you have a question, call Sergeant Dunn and she'll get in contact with me.
Sounds good, Decker said. Thank you, Erin.
Elena, please.
Elena, then.
Tell my mom I love her, but make sure no one's following you.
I'll be sure to relay the message, and I'll be sure to be alone. The trio walked a block in silence. Erin started to speak, but then stopped herself. Decker caught it. What is it, Elena?
The figure digging the hole.
She stopped talking. Marge put her arm around her shoulder and talked softly.
What about him? I might be wrong. I wasn't thinking clearly at all, but...
Go on, Marge said.
I think... I'm not sure.
She swallowed.
I think I remember seeing him without a shirt. I don't know why he'd be without a shirt. Maybe he worked up a sweat digging. Anyway, I could be making all this up. The mind plays tricks after you think about something over and over.
Sometimes, Decker said. But sometimes you remember details that have been pushed aside. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, like I said, it was very dark, and I really never made out his face. I mean, I saw a face, but no features, really. Like, just this shadow.
Okay.
Like I said, I might be making this up, but I saw this guy shirtless. I remember in my mind now that he wasn't all that big, and he wasn't all that muscular.
She turned to Marge, then to Decker.
I've seen Rick's body many times. I don't think the Digger was Rick Diaz.
Back at the hotel room, Decker was pacing. Two people. It's so obvious now. That's what happens when you get tunnel vision.
Until now, there was nothing to lead you in that direction, Marge said. There are plenty of serial killers who bury bodies all by their lonesome.
And how could I miss Diaz? He turned to Rena. Did he give off a weird vibe to you?
Actually, in retrospect, he did.
How so?
Saying that he'd remember me because I was a pretty older woman.
She made a face.
Almost identical to what Hank Carter said to me.
Decker slapped his forehead. You're right. I bet you they're in cahoots. Marge said, slow down, partner. I know you don't like Carter, but you might want to get something to tie him with Diaz before you reach conclusions. You're right. I don't like Carter, so I'm putting him in the picture. But Rena's right. The phraseology was almost identical. It's something to consider.
Of course, Marge said. I'll keep an eye on Elena for you. Make sure she's okay and that she doesn't run. If she stays put, I'm betting I can get her to come around.
How the hell did I miss Ricardo Diaz? Decker was still admonishing himself. I'm sure he didn't show up on any registered sex offender list in the area.
Maybe he wasn't a registered sex offender, Rena said.
No, you don't suddenly choke a woman to near death and not have done it before, Marge said. Maybe he hadn't been caught, or he did it and scared the wits out of his victims. He certainly scared Elena. Or maybe he is a sex offender, but when he came to Greenbury, he didn't register.
Abruptly, Rena said, he dyes his hair.
Decker looked up at her. What?
He had dyed blonde hair. I remember noticing that he had dark roots.
So much for my powers of observation.
Women notice these things. I thought the color was an affectation, an attempt to be cool with the college kids. But in context, it could be he was changing his identity.
Decker pawed through his notes. I'm rusty, Rena said.
Stop berating yourself. You found Aaron Young when everyone else gave up.
She found Aaron Young. Decker cocked his head toward Marge.
After you gave me the picture, Marge said. Anyway, let's concentrate on Ricardo Diaz. What do you know about him?
Just what he told me about himself, Decker said. Probably all lies.
He continued to page through his notes.
Where the hell is that list?
What list? Marge said.
The registry of sex offenders in the area. I thought I brought it with me. I was planning to show it to Erin or Elena, ask her if she knew anyone on there, but it turned out to be irrelevant. I can't believe I left it at home. Shit. I bet Donati's looking through it right now.
Why would he do that? Rena said.
Because he can. A pause. Maybe I can call him up and have him read it to me. There weren't that many names, as I recall.
Why don't you call Tyler?
Because that would be way too logical. Decker picked up his cell. A moment later, he was explaining the situation to the kid.
To Marge, Rena said, you know, your help has been invaluable. You solved one case, but maybe more.
We got lucky. I'm just glad that Erin is alive. I'll work on her to give up Ricardo Diaz. These things take time, though. The big guy will need to keep track of him.
I'm sure Pete will put a man on him. Most of the time, it's pretty quiet where we are.
Decker hung up. Tyler's emailing me the sex offenders list as we speak.
Good, Marge said. I need to get back to work.
Go, go. I've already wasted enough of your time.
It certainly wasn't a waste of time to solve a missing person case.
And I'm happy to be a part of it, she hugged Decker. See you tomorrow night?
8 o'clock. We'll be there.
You'd better.
I bought a whole new set of pots and pans and plastic dishes just for you.
Rena kissed her cheek.
Thank you.
See you then.
Marge gently closed the door as she left. Decker kept his eyes glued to his iPad. He said,
She probably thinks I'm a doofus.
She adores you, and so do I.
Ah, thank you, Harvard. The attachment was a list of 30 names. His phone rang. McAdams's cell.
Got the list, thanks.
The kid said,
Ricardo Diaz isn't on it.
That much I know. We'd remember if he was. We should look for possible aliases, like the one staring right in front of me.
Richard Damon, McAdams said.
You're one step ahead of me.
I'll call Marge and ask her to run the name through the National Register of Sex Offenders and NCIC for me. If Ricardo Diaz is the same guy as Richard Damon, it means that Diaz didn't register as a sex offender. I can bring him in. But I don't want to play that card until I have more information.
Like what?
Like another open case with the same M.O. We need to find out if Diaz had an alibi for the night Yvette Jones went missing.
I thought he told us that he didn't arrive in Greenbury until after she disappeared.
According to him, McAdams said. I could come down tomorrow while you're still in Ventura and question him myself. He's going to tell me that he can't remember back 7 years ago. But I can find out where he was living and verify that.
If you wouldn't mind, it would help. But don't ask him about the others, especially Erin Young. Don't want to let on that we found her. Just make like we're getting nowhere, and this is just a routine follow-up.
Interesting to see how he handles being questioned again.
He knows Erin escaped, and we know that he had a partner. When I get off the phone with you, I'll call up Greenbury and have Kevin watch him. Let's see if he tries to contact someone.
Want me to apply for his phone records?
Without Erin, we don't have enough evidence to justify a warrant. But it would be interesting to see if he meets anyone. Keep a watch.
What about the other two murders when he was living in Greenbury?
Don't mention those.
You think he was involved?
3 bodies buried in the same place? Yes, I think he was involved. He admitted that he knew Pettigrew, and he admitted that he remembered Oakham very well. Let me call the name Richard Damon in to Marge. I'd call Greenbury to look it up, but I know her department has a bigger database.
Still using outside help, old man.
Harvard, I'm using any help I can get.
Chapter 33. The Sabbath couldn't come soon enough. Decker needed Saturday to rest and to recoup his strength. In the morning, he and Rena walked on the beach admiring the infinity of the ocean and the wheel of life, and, with God's help, how things had turned out grand for both of them. After lunch, they reversed directions and walked into town, window shopping and people watching with lots of couples and families enjoying the weekend. By the time they returned to the hotel, it was late afternoon. Rena put her feet up on the couch and settled in to read her book. Decker tried to follow suit. His brain had been on hibernation. Now it was awakening from its needed rest, and once the ideas started, he couldn't stop them. It angered him that Ricardo Diaz, who had attempted to murder Erin Young, was a free bird, working in Decker's town, thinking he got away with something. Rena noticed that he was fidgety.
If McAdams has something to tell you, he'll call you.
I know. A pause. I'm fine.
What's on your mind, Peter?
A shrug. Like I don't know.
You're furious about Diaz, and without Aaron's help, you're stymied. It's okay, something will break. You'll probably find Diaz in some kind of database. If Tyler or Marge found something out, you'd know.
I'm assuming he isn't, because neither of them has called me.
Or maybe they just wanted you to enjoy the day without thinking about work. You'll find out tonight. I'm sure you two will have plenty to talk about.
Will, too. He was in the job for a long time.
We'll try not to bore you.
It's not boring. I'm interested. I'm glad you have a case to talk about. It's probably a little more interesting than tales of bird watching.
Decker smiled. Maybe.
So do yourself a favor and turn off your brain for just a few more hours.
I've got a good way to do that.
Rena smiled.
I thought you'd never ask.
After drinks and chips and olives, Marge led Decker and Rena to a beautifully appointed dining room table.
I'll just be a minute, Marge said.
Can I help? Rena asked.
We're fine, Marge looked at her husband. Right? Oh, sure, Will said. Sit, Rena.
He got up and followed his wife into the kitchen.
This is lovely, Rena said.
Marge had really gone all out, from cleaning her oven to buying new cookware, plates, and silverware in order to comply with their rules for keeping kosher. The table was set with placemats and napkin rings and included silver bird decorations in the middle of a vintage trestle table. She and Will lived in a Victorian house in the mountains south of Old Town. The interior had light-painted walls, hardwood floors, and a paneled parlor. And while Marge had comfortable furniture, she had added a few antiques to give it an authentic touch. The decor was so quaint and charming, it could have been a movie set. Marge came back holding a casserole dish. She set it down on a trivet, opened the lid, and steam poured out.
Ta-da!
It smells wonderful, Decker said. What is it?
Cassoulet, she crowed.
Will smoked the duck himself. He also made the sausage.
Glad kosher meat, Rena. I went to the butcher myself.
You bought kosher duck?
She did.
Will was carrying a large salad bowl and several baguettes. He placed the items on the table.
I won't tell you what it cost.
Will, Marge slugged him, what's the matter with you?
If you're not used to kosher prices, it's sticker shock. Decker turned to Will. We owe you, buddy.
Dodger tickets would be a good start.
Marge slugged him again.
Ow! William Tecumseh Barnes's blue eyes twinkled with mischief. He was a little over 6 feet, and after retiring from the force, his weight had turned north of 200 pounds. His thin hair was white, as was his goatee.
Or if you don't do baseball, we could just come out to Greenbury and do some birding.
Anytime, Rena said. Decker pulled out a bottle of Herzog Reserve Syrah that he and Rena had picked up on the way to Ventura.
Bottle opener, perchance?
Now you're talking my language, Will said.
I'm starving, Marge started serving.
After everyone had food and drink, she sat down. 20 minutes of table conversation spanned topics from police work and politics to the arts and fashion before Rena said,
I noticed no one has mentioned anything about the case. I'm very proud of all of you.
Now you may talk shop.
I was going to wait until after dinner, but as long as you brought it up.
Marge got up and came back with a sheet of paper a moment later. She handed it to Decker.
Is this your guy?
Decker was looking at a mugshot of Richard Damon. 6'1", 190, brown hair, brown eyes. Distinguishing marks included tattoos on his arms, leg, and back, the most noticeable being a panther's head on his right.